Okay. Well, as most of you know, we've been in the Ten Commandments, and we'll be for a little while yet, it seems. We took a little break from it last week. This week, we're going to talk about the Fifth Commandment, honor your father and your mother. See if anybody gets up and leaves at this point. yes, Jason, I expect you to be paying full attention. Anybody sitting next to their parent had better pay very close attention. I had a constant visual reminder at my house of why we're in the Ten Commandments and what we're doing studying this ancient text, which, as many of you know, through a long and dramatic series of events, which are neither here nor there, but we finally ended up paying someone to paint our house, and I think he gave us a pretty good deal. But because of that, of course, there was frequently scaffolding around our house this past couple weeks, and every time I pulled up in the driveway and saw the scaffolding, my brain working the way it does, I thought of the Ten Commandments, because I was like, that is what the scaffolding, that's part of what, okay, I'll explain this in a minute, but it's like, to me, it feels like sort of the in ministry, the things that we're called to do, sort of the top of ministry, which is to, like in the end of the Gospel of Matthew, to go out and preach the word to the nations, to go out and preach the gospel to all nations, to love your neighbor as yourself, and love your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Like, these are sort of the top of the commandment pyramids, the things that you absolutely have to do. But you can't do those things, you can't minister to other people, you can't love people the way you have to love them, unless you have this strong foundation. You just can't. It'll fall apart. And so, to me, the Ten Commandments is like the scaffolding, allows us to do, you know, if you are pay attention to these germane core values that God himself has given us, and you live your life as best as you are able, of course, with the caveat we all fall, you know, you live your life according to these values, then you will be able to do the kind of ministry that really Christ calls us to do, which is a very high calling indeed. I don't know if everybody looks at scaffolding around their house has that thought, but I honestly, every time I was like, that's the Ten Commandments. You know, you can't paint the house without the scaffolding, which is probably why I went into ministry. So, anyway. Can you go to the... Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that. Up until a few minutes ago, Elizabeth had no idea she'd be running the PowerPoint, so... thank you for doing that. Honor your father and your mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. And no surprise to any of you, the key word in that commandment is the word honor. So I thought I'd read a couple, three other areas in the Old Testament where the word honor is used. These are all from Proverbs. And this is the same Hebrew word that I've got in red up there, kved. Used in these passages. Proverbs chapter 21. Whoever pursues righteousness and love finds life, prosperity, and honor. Proverbs 22, verse 4. Humility is the fear of the Lord. Its wages are riches and honor and life. Proverbs chapter 26. Like snow in summer or rain in harvest, honor is not fitting for a fool. I like that one. So, there's a lot of wisdom in this simple commandment. It could fill a library of textbooks, and I'm not going to be able to touch upon all the stuff here. But I want to start by looking first at this word, honor, kved. The root of this word means weight. At most simple level, it means weight, heaviness. It's a word that's rarely used in that sense in the Bible. In other words, it rarely just means heavy or weightiness. It's usually used in a more metaphorical fashion and often used in a negative fashion. For example, in the Old Testament, people's sins are called weights on their lives, a heaviness on their lives, using that same word, kved. Sometimes people's hearts are said to become heavy within them in a negative fashion, which is usually interpreted into English as hardened. In other words, when Pharaoh's heart is hardened in the story of the Exodus, it's the exact same word, kved. So that sort of heaviness of the heart that's unmoving is also the same word that's used for honor. So it's a very multi-purpose word in the Hebrew Bible. However, in this context, it has a positive meaning. If something has great weight, I think it's obvious to see how that something would also have great power or authority. And then to give someone that kind of authority or power, you could see how that would be translated as honor. To give someone weight, to give someone importance. That's a way of honoring someone. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, the reason I read those three verses from Proverbs about different ways we can attain honor is because in the normal course of our lives, honor, which is to say our importance and our authority and our power, our dignity, is something that's earned, right? From those three pastors in Proverbs, and there's other places too I could have quoted, that honor is something that you earn. Honor is not something you should give to a fool. It's one of the Proverbs that we read. Humility and righteousness and love are characteristics that we develop that will give us honor in the eyes of the Lord and usually in the eyes of each other as well. Not, as this world tells us, by the way, not intelligence and cunning and strength. Those are the things that this world honors and gives honor to, people who are considered a cut above everybody else, the Bill Gateses, whatever. That's not the biblical honor. Righteousness, love, humility, those are the things that God gives honor to. But all that aside, this text, the fifth commandment, gives a command that ignores the normal course of things. The normal course of things being that honor is something you earn. The honor that one gives to one's parents is different from the other kinds of honor which are earned in the world. And what is more, it's an important enough kind of honor that God made it one of the Ten Commandments, which I know is an obvious thing because we're in the Ten Commandments, but it does bear some reflecting of the depth of importance of this type of honor of one's parents. Making it all the more complicated for me as a preacher, no reason is really given for this. There's no exegetical work done in the text. There's no place in the Old Testament where suddenly Malachi or Zephaniah is like, and this is what this means when it says to honor your parents. It's just right there in black and white, honor your parents, and it doesn't really say why per se, or doesn't unpack it. So with that kind of view, in that sense, that limited sense, this commandment really is kind of mysterious. I don't mean to honor one's parents is mysterious. In the natural order of things, we should ascribe honor to our parents. But consider this, that all parents out there are not deserving of honor. Right? I think we could all agree on that, that there are a number of parents out there, people who have children, who are not necessarily deserving of the type of honor that we would typically give to people that we would honor. I wonder if I said honor enough in that sentence. Those who abandon their children or who abuse them or who in other ways betray or seriously betray a child's trust, how do we honor that? And I would imagine that such things back then were as common then as they are today. So I would say that perhaps the first question to be asked is similar to the question asked of Jesus many centuries later in the context of who is my neighbor, who are my parents? So here's a basic fact of life. The fact that you are sitting right here in this space and I'm standing here speaking to you means that all of us at some point in time took care of you. Someone worked for you. Someone worked on your behalf. Someone was pregnant with you, gave birth to you. Someone fed you. Someone clothed you, changed you. When you were a bit older, someone taught you how to speak and how to eat and taught you how to change your clothes and how to read. Someone taught you how to live. And let me tell you what I've learned from personal experience these last few years. That took some time. That was not a light thing. That was a heavy thing, if you will. It took blood, sweat, and tears, and it was no small investment. Somebody did these things for you. Now, whoever it was who did these things for you, they may or may not have been biologically related to you. They may or not have been your, quote-unquote, parents in the physical sense of the term. It may have been a number of different people who saw you through your childhood. Not everybody just has the same set of caretakers slash parents from birth on up. Such deviations from what we would call today the nuclear family were, by the way, also common back in biblical times. Just tended to be through different means. Today, we have divorce and a lot of out-of-wedlock births and all these things that sort of fragments the family. Back then, death was the real fragmenter. People tended to die younger. A lot of young women even died in childbirth. So there was a lot of fragmentation in families even back in biblical times. So the concern throughout the Bible, thus the concern throughout the Bible about how to treat and care for orphans and widows. You can't turn a page in the Bible without seeing something about orphans and widows. That's because they were very, very common. So if I take that bit of information and I combine it with this commandment, it's not as though God is saying to us in giving us this commandment that you will have a stable nuclear family and you must honor that stable nuclear family. Life was more complicated then, it seems to me, in reading the Bible, reading about the families that we have in the Bible. My God, they're complicated. And it's certainly more complicated now. So trying to get close to the heart of this passage then, a better interpretation is perhaps someone parented you, or like I said, you wouldn't have even survived the first day of your life. Someone parented you, some group of people perhaps, and that is how you got this far in life. And that is deserving of honor, that cold, hard fact. It's not to be taken lightly or for granted or sneered at or ignored. This group of people, parents, metaphorically or literally, are the ones who invested in you more than anyone else, and as such deserve honor. Now, at this point, I want to take a moment and thank God above that God used the word honor, this word heaviness, weight, importance. We can all be very grateful for that, because we can all honor those who parented us, who did all those things that I've described. It doesn't say agree with. Agree with your father and mother that the days may be long with you. No, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say model your life after. You know, imitate your father and mother so that your days will go long, etc. It doesn't say that. It doesn't even say love. Although, as a disciple of Christ, we try to love everyone. That is a very hard thing. But stepping back from painting the house back to the scaffold says honor. This is talking about building the base of discipleship. So it doesn't even say love your parents. It just says honor, to ascribe to them this weight that we spoke of, this dignity. And anyone can do that. You could have a parent who's made some very poor choices. You may have a parent who's made some very poor choices. I have some parents who made some poor choices. You can still honor them. They may have made very, very, very poor choices. You may have a parent who's in prison. You can still honor them. You can refuse to talk badly about them regardless of what they have done. You can visit them or send them things of encouragement or minister to them in various ways and try to help them. Even if your parents, the people who took care of you when you were growing up, become so poisonous to you and so, unrepentant in their ways that you cannot literally even be around them, you can still pray for them and ascribe to them this honor, this dignity of which God speaks, at the very least. So thank God that that word is honor, or this would be a sermon that I literally wouldn't know how to give, considering what some parents have done or do. And that, again, I want to emphasize sort of the scaffolding relationship of this, because I'm talking about the bare bones. Of course, we want to love our parents and be in a close, intimate relationship with them, and many of us are. But we're just talking about the scaffold, the requirements of the Lord in relationship to our parents. So, now I'm going to go even a little bit deeper. What time is it, actually? Six? Okay. Okay, I'm going to go a little bit deeper here, maybe not as far as the end of my sermon, and I want to say from the outset that what I'm going to say next really is, I feel like what I just said there, in as much as I'm sure of anything, I think that was of the Lord, and I think that is a fair assessment of that passage. What I'm saying now, digging a little deeper, is sort of conjecture on my part, and I hope to say educated guesses, but if what I say is not helpful or you disagree, that's fine. You can just let it go. I'm not. But I think what I just said really is the appropriate way to approach that passage. It's very simple to honor the people who cared for you when you were growing up, and it's just the surface reading of that passage. What keeps nagging at me, though, is why is this so important? Surely this message could have been communicated elsewhere in Exodus or Deuteronomy or some other part of the Torah without being one of the core 10 commandments. Because in my view, and I don't have time to go through each one point by point, but in my view, the other commandments are rather necessary, absolutely necessary, to just living in society together as Christians. You have to know God. You can't be a thief or an adulterer. Even Sabbath makes sense because of our intrinsic need for rest. And even if that didn't make sense, the Bible does a great job of unpacking the importance of Sabbath in the Ten Commandments. There's sort of this exegetical, this paragraph about why Sabbath is important. So it's explained to us in ways that this one isn't. So this one, to me, is somewhat surprising. Why would honoring your parents, especially considering the breadth of parental actions that we see, why would it be so germane, so necessary to the fabric of our life together? Or at the very least, shouldn't the commandment be for parents to care well for their children? Because that seems to be, to me, more the locus of responsibility. Why is the emphasis on children, children honoring your parents? And I don't really know the answer to this, but here's a guess, a thought of mine. When you are born, when I was born, we didn't know God in any actively aware manner. In fact, we didn't really know anything in sort of any active sense. When you are very little, God is essentially your parents. Your parents are God when you're little. Your parents provide for you, they love you, they tend to your needs, they are certainly the authority in your life, they are the ones that allow you to survive. They are, in a kind of a real sense, when you're that little, God. You fear them a little bit, you love them deeply without even knowing that you love them, and you love them unconditionally. That's our childlike relationship with our parents. As we grow older, we begin to understand our parents in more human terms. And our relationship to them becomes less dependent, of course, and we're able to see their strengths and weaknesses more clearly. I'm not looking forward to my kids seeing my weaknesses more clearly, but it's coming. And it's at this crucial stage, when we start to see our parents as people, that all these qualities that in the past that we've attributed to our parents need to shift towards God, our spiritual parent. That God will care for us, that God loves us that way, that God, that's what needs to happen. We realize at that point that our parents can't care for us the way they always have, that they're not perfect. They're not pure evil, but they're not perfect. They're human, and they will not always be there to care for us and protect us. And when we shift these qualities towards God, in other words, we realize our parents aren't God, but hopefully in our development someone has informed us or we become aware that there is a God, a creator of the universe. Well then, at the same time that that shifts, what I see in my life and in others, that our attitude towards our parents shifts towards God. So that God becomes God, and then all the issues we've had with our parents sometimes get put on God. Has been my impression. And that's been my, it's not just something I see, it's something I experienced when I became a Christian and I had some things I had to work through with God. I'm glad to see the psychologist in the building is nodding. So you see where I'm going with this. In a way, our treatment of our parents, the way we conceive of our parents, the way we think about our parents, and the manner in which we approach our relationship with them from a very early age is sort of like practice for our eternal relationship with God. It's like the training wheels for our relationship with God. And I dare say that if you are one of the blessed few that has or has had a healthy relationship with your parents, then I bet there were fewer obstacles in coming before the Lord and having a healthy relationship with God. Not necessarily. There's more factors that play in, but it couldn't have hurt. Serious issues with our parents and our attitude towards our parents is easily transferred to God in our faith. So in my mind, or at least what seemed to me as a possibility, that there could be an eternal element to honoring one's parents, something that is truly eternal. It's the practice part of our relationship with our perfect Father in heaven, as Jesus calls God in his prayers. I'll skip that. So just this idea of God as our father or parent, I think, is more than mere metaphor. I think there's a truth to it that really is quite literal. As a rabbi once said, there are three partners in the making of a human being, a father, a mother, and the Holy One of Blessing. So God frequently describes himself as a parent to his people. You know, you're familiar with these passages in the Old Testament. Israel is my firstborn son. Jeremiah chapter 31, truly Ephraim, which is another word for Israel, is a dear son to me. That is why my heart yearns for him. I will receive him back with love. And, you know, other passages as well. I'll skip for the moment, but God's self-awareness is something as a parent to us. So, as another facet of this, sorry, I'm skipping around here a little bit, so I apologize if it seems a little disconnected, but another facet of this, that in honoring one's parents, one begins to honor God and to know how to honor God. When we are young, our parents allow things to happen to us that we do not like, and sometimes, you know, require us to do things that we might not like, the eating vegetables phenomenon of raising kids. Generally, they're for our own good. I remember crying under the kitchen table once in my home, back in 1979, refusing to come out from under the kitchen table because the bus was waiting outside with a full load of kids and I was supposed to be in the bus and I did not want to go in that bus and I thought school was not going to be fun. I don't remember how that ended. I just remember that moment in time. But something my parents were requiring of me I did not want to do. I remember eating vegetables and tofu in copious amounts. I remember not owning a TV when all my other friends owned a TV and thinking how deeply unfair that was. And we all had to learn how to honor our parents in spite of not always getting what we wanted and in spite of things not making sense in the world to us sometimes. So it's easy to see, as an aside, sort of, why parents who abuse their children in various ways while telling them it's for their own good do deep systemic damage to that child's ability to ever trust God. God asks us to do things we may not wish to do. God lets things happen to us that we do not understand. Even as when we were very little children, so did our parents. And we have many of the same questions for God that we had for our parents growing up, and many of the same anxieties. You know, kids ask why? Why is the sky blue? Why is the car going that way? Why aren't we going this way? And we never really grow out of that stage. Just the questions get much more serious and adult-like and mysterious. Questions we'll never know the answer to. You know, I have a lot of questions. Why did Michael's coworker pass away the other day? I don't think I'll know the answer to that, the side of heaven. There's no good answer to that. It's a terrible thing. Is there any good answer for it? I don't think so. So is it part of some larger plan? Is it a victory for Satan? What purpose or meaning could come from it, or anything difficult or complicated that happens in our life? I don't know. Nobody knows. You don't know. I don't know. Nobody understands why these things happen or what the meaning of it is. So, like all the things my parents did that I did not understand, I still don't understand what my Father in Heaven's thinking or planning, or why some things happen and some things don't. But my parents told me this. They told me that when I grew up, that many things I did not understand now would be made clear to me. And that became true, even though at the time I did not believe them. Or I didn't even care if it was true or not, because I was so mad that I had to eat my vegetables. But that, to me, strikes me as a real strong and perfect parallel to how we relate to our Lord now. That things are going to happen, and they're going to be bad, and sometimes God will allow things to happen that we don't understand. But God has promised us that there will be an end to those questions. And I don't know if the end to those questions looks like. I can't explain it or describe it, or heaven would be here. But I'm confident that even as I didn't understand my own childhood, that I don't understand this childhood, the childhood of being an adult in a broken world. But I'm confident there are answers that are waiting. And so maybe that's part of the honoring the parents' commandment. We have to honor God in the same way, even though we don't understand. Does anybody have any comments or questions before I pray for our time of communion? Jim?
Well, you used the word